going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
And he can't get it through. The Canadians will clear it to center. And now one man back in Roy. Dvorak goes cross ice. And it's picked up by Armia. They scramble a shot. And it kicks off Thompson. And scrims out the other side. Jake Evans almost tied it. He had most of the net to shoot at. And Thompson just did get a piece of it. As the Caps get back into the offensive zone. That was almost disaster in a tie game. It was not. It came out the other side.
Wow, what a goaltending night for Logan Thompson, especially in the third period. When I watch a game like last night, I'm always reminded about something that Tarik El-Bashir said to me 10, 15 years ago on the air. He was talking about the NHL playoffs, and he said the sport this time of year shouldn't be called hockey, it should be called goalie. Logan Thompson, the star last night. Third period, amazing. The Caps take a 2-0 lead in the series. They are headed to Montreal and the Bell Center for Game 3 tomorrow night. Good morning, everybody. Al Kokin will join me in 20 minutes to talk about the game last night. A second straight game where Montreal, I don't know much about hockey, but I thought they played very well in the third period, and the Caps were kind of holding on for dear life last night, courtesy of their goaltender making incredible saves, who, by the way, was a question mark coming into the series off an injury. But we will get to Smoke and Al at 10:25 and do some hockey with Al. But it is the night of NFL Draft 2025 first round, and we'll have coverage here all day long on my show, Chris's show, Craig's show. Craig will be on until 8 tonight, and then Linnell and Toby will take over to host a draft show on the station from 8 p.m. until 1 a.m. I was thinking about this, that if Washington stays at 29 and makes a pick at 29, and every team uses its full allotted 10 minutes to pick, we're talking 280 minutes before Washington would be on the clock. I mean, I can do that math. That would be 4 hours and 40 minutes. That would be 12:40 before they're on the clock. Now, not every team takes 10 minutes. Even when television stretches some of this stuff out, my guess is that they pick sometime between 11:30 and midnight, something like that. Maybe sooner. Some teams go pretty quickly. But it'll be a wait. It'll be a wait for the first time in a while. But the draft is awesome, man. It's also such a good television show every year. Even if, you know, the players that are picked, there's about a 30% chance they'll end up being significant contributors to a team over the next 3 years or within 3 years. And look, every year this is about the quarterbacks, which leads me to this from Marcus. Oh, Marcus. Marcus writes, Kevin, I really hope tonight isn't the Shedeur Sanders show. To watch him watch the board go by without being selected when there are 31 other players who will be realizing their dreams tonight. Please let your ESPN friends know that this isn't about one man. There are so many other beautiful stories to be shared. Thank you, Marcus. Marcus, I do have friends at ESPN, but I'm pretty sure letting them know how you feel won't make a difference. If the other 31 players that get picked in the first round, if they're not quarterbacks, if they wanted the bulk of attention on draft night, they should have played quarterback. Because this sport has always been about the quarterbacks, and tonight is almost always about the quarterbacks, even when the quarterbacks aren't very good and aren't necessarily first-round material. But when you get a story like Shedeur Sanders, the son of Deion Sanders, and the attention that Colorado got because of primetime, because of his sons, plural, Shedeur in particular, because people have been mocking Shedeur Sanders super high in this draft before last year's draft, and now it appears as if he could fall, maybe completely out of the first round. Yeah, this isn't, you know, all due respect to the other players, and you'll get plenty on them. It's not like they get ignored. But this sport has always been quarterback first, quarterback second, and then maybe count five spaces, as Coach Thompson would say, before you get to whatever is next. You'll hear a lot about the other 31 players, but trust me, ESPN, they're not stupid. The show and the attention of the audience will be on the quarterbacks and on where Shedeur Sanders goes, if he goes at all, in the first round. Should be exciting tonight. We got a lot coming up on the show. I promised you I would do corners. We're going to make our picks for who Washington will select on the show today. Craig and Chris will both jump on with me, so we'll do a little 980 pick segment at 11:40. Ben Standig at 12. I mentioned Al Koken coming up at 10:25, and maybe one other guest on the show as well, hoping to get somebody that always joins me this time of year to talk about the draft before the end of today's show. We'll give you guys a chance, hopefully, as well, to weigh in on what you want. But let's get to a big story last night, certainly on social media with a lot of Washington fans, HTTR and HTTC fans. This was the president last night being asked about the new stadium in D.C. and the team name.
When you go back to India, they pull this. They don't know why these names are being taken off. They're trying to. I think it's degrading to the Indian population, and it's a great population, and they like when they're, you know, called by various names. Now, Washington, the Redskins, perhaps that's a little different, a little bit different, but I can tell you that I spoke to people of Indian heritage that love that name and they love that team, and I think it's a much, you know, I think it's a superior name to what they have right now, and it had heritage behind it, it had something special. But a lot of the names having to do with, you know, different places, not just Indians, but I think it's, they changed the name of the Cleveland Indians.
You know, he also said, and I don't think we caught it there, he also said something about the name. He said, Redskins, perhaps that's a little different, but I can tell you I spoke to people of Indian heritage and they love that name and they love that team. Maybe we did play that part and I just missed that part. So, look, this lit up social media last night, certainly in our, you know, world of Washington football fans. You know, there's something that I've talked about a few times, and that is, you know, before the stadium got to this state, the city's control again, with the RFK site plan that passed, you know, at 2 a.m. in the morning, courtesy actually of Chuck Schumer, of all people, considering that the president now is weighing in on the team name, that maybe, you know, Trump would somehow tie a return to the city or a quid pro quo on the land being turned over to the city with the team going back to its old name. So this was brought up, obviously, yesterday. Somebody asked him about it. It was not something that he offered up. There's something that Tom had mentioned, Tom Lavero had mentioned, in a column about 2 months ago. You know, my first thought was, well, how can he force the team to change the name back? The city now has the land. They have control over the land. They've got a lease that's like 100 years where they can do with the land what they choose to do with the land. Like, what sort of, you know, control or what sort of mechanism could he use to create a scenario in which, and by the way, this would be awesome for some of us, many of us, the majority of us, if somehow he were able to get Josh Harris, who, by the way, has been a, you know, he's donated to Trump and is friendly with Trump and has been friendly with Trump for a while, if they could get the team to go back to the old name. You know, 2025 is much different than 2020. And I thought, I'm like, there's no, how can they do that? Like, they can't. They could take over the city. He's threatened that, you know, in recent months. But Tom wrote something a few months ago in one of his columns, and I was reminded of it. And it's called something called the D.C. Financial Control Board. The D.C. Financial Control Board was actually established during the Clinton administration in 1995. It was a five-member body established by United States by the United States Congress to oversee the finances of the city. It was created through the District of Columbia's Financial Responsibility and Management Assistance Act of 1995. And the board had the power to override decisions by D.C.'s mayor and the city council. Now, it suspended its activities 6 years after it was established on September 30th, 2001, 24 plus years ago, or coming up on 24 years ago, when the district achieved a consecutive budget balanced for the fourth consecutive year. And so they suspended it, but they have the ability, Tom wrote, to resurrect that. Why is that important? Because ultimately, the city may control the land, but if Congress controls the finances of the city with a five-member U.S. Congress board overseeing it, they could stop the process of the $850 million going to infrastructure for this deal. What do I think is going to happen to all of this? I don't know. It obviously excited so many people. The idea of, wow, a new stadium in D.C. tied to, courtesy of this administration, a change back to the old name. I would bet against it. I would bet against it. But there's always hope that something could happen. Keep in mind, when he said, the Redskins perhaps a little different than the Chiefs and Indians, we know that it's different, okay? The difference being, it is dictionary defined as pejorative, as insensitive. Even though overwhelmingly over the years, Native Americans themselves have said, as he pointed out, they don't have an issue. They don't consider the name to be insensitive. They like the name. They didn't want it changed in the first place. We all know that. We've all followed the story over the years. Forget the outside noise. We've been involved in following this from the inside. We've seen and read every single poll. We know that we had people that we knew, like Cooley, associated with the team, going to many reservations. You know, 40 to 50 reservations over a few year period. And overwhelmingly, they didn't want the name changed. They didn't consider it to be insensitive. Now, every reservation, every tribe is very autonomous. It's a very, you know, autonomous situation. There are over 500 tribes and everybody's got a different opinion. But overwhelmingly, we've seen the polling reflect it's not insensitive to us. We don't think that the name should be changed. However, it is different than Chiefs and Indians. We can acknowledge that as well. because of the dictionary definition, which is why starting 15 years ago, I suggested to Bruce Allen and others, apply for a second non-pejorative dictionary definition. Redskins, noun. This is the second definition. The football team that plays in Washington, D.C. Redskins, noun. A player who plays for the Redskins in Washington, a player who plays for the professional football team who plays in Washington, D.C. Language evolves. There are always updates and new definitions created. And that would end that part of the debate. But we'll see whether or not anything comes of this. My guess is it won't. You know, part of what Josh Harris, Mitch Rales, and ownership, what they were able to do a few months ago is they were able to take the momentum of 12-5, two road playoff wins, 60 minutes from the Super Bowl with a superstar rookie quarterback and say, you know, we don't have to go down this path. But remember, the path that they were trying to avoid because of complexity, A, B, cost, is coming up with a new name, not going back to the old name. Going back to the old name would be a gold mine, and they understand that too. But it's been more about the league pushing back and saying, nope, that horse left the barn. We're not going back to something that's controversial. Whether it should be controversial with people who make it controversial or not, it doesn't matter. We know what the result will be. We will have corporate sponsors that will say their consumers and their shareholders don't like this. And they've already done it. It was hard to do it, but they already got it done. Thank you, Fred Smith. And they're not going to go back to it. That's all I got on that. Honestly, my hunch is not a lot will come of this. That the city controls the land, that the D.C. Control Board, Financial Control Board, won't be resurrected to stop the city from financing infrastructure for a new stadium, and that eventually we'll see if the stadium doesn't move forward, it would be more because of pushback from constituents, from city council members, from this $410 million cut required in the 2025 budget, things like that. All right, we got a lot of draft to talk about. I have some predictions on tonight's draft. I've got three related NFL predictions, and I've got three related Washington predictions. I'm going to do my three related NFL predictions right now. Then we'll have Koken jump on to talk hockey, and then I'll have my three Washington predictions later on this hour. But I've got three, what I would consider to be somewhat bold NFL draft predictions.
A little hot taken?
Yeah. I was thinking about this actually yesterday after the show, and I did some of this on my podcast yesterday, but I felt in just looking at the quarterbacks over the last week and then reading about how Shedeur Sanders is dropping, there have been some very damning quotes out there about Shedeur Sanders. You know, anonymous NFL scouts saying the interview processes were disasters, that he's not that good, he doesn't see it. I think a lot of that is true, personally, about his on-the-field performance. But bold NFL draft prediction number one is this. Only one quarterback goes tonight in the first round. Only one. By the way, have you seen Shedeur Sanders, some of the odds on Shedeur?
Yeah, they've been...
over-under on the pick spot was like 9.5 2 days ago because of New Orleans at 9. Now it's 21.5.
It's crazy.
Yeah, because of Pittsburgh. If Pittsburgh doesn't take him at 21, because it certainly appears as if New Orleans will not take him at 21, if Pittsburgh takes Jackson Dart or doesn't take a quarterback, he's not going in the first round unless somebody trades back into the first round to take him. So bold prediction number one is that there's just one quarterback, and it's Cam Ward at number one overall.
Not
you know, the over-under is still at 2.5.
You're not a Jackson Dart believer, Kevin?
I'm not a Jackson Dart believer as a big-time starting NFL quarterback.
That we agree. But GMs are dumb, and I could see some GM trading back into the first to get this kid.
I think if somebody trades back into the first to get somebody, it would be Tyler Shook.
Oh, even worse decision, but we can get to that
He's
later.
The one that looks the part at 6'5", with a good arm, throws with anticipation. By the way, I'm not a massive fan of him either. I think he ultimately could be like Will Levis. He could be more of a backup quarterback. I see Jackson Dart and even Shook to a certain degree as products of very good systems. Jeff Brohm at Louisville and obviously Lane Kiffin at Ole Miss. I Jackson Dart has some moxie to him and has some playmaking ability to him. I don't see Shedeur Sanders. I've been saying this. Denton and I have been talking about this since early in the college football season. And so I don't see a quarterback other than Cam Ward going. It's bold. I'm not saying I'm going to be right. I wanted to be a little bit bold. The over-under on quarterbacks in the first round is 2.5 right now. There's no way we're getting 3. I would go under that. Although I'm a little bit skeptical as to why it's still hanging in there at 2.5. Now, it's costly to go under. Like I'm seeing 2.5 unders minus 195.
Ooh.
So you got to pay to go under. Yeah. So that's bold prediction number one. Bold prediction number two, and I have to clarify this one. If we take Travis Hunter out of the equation as a receiver, even though I think that's the position that most GMs believe he'll be great at and will focus on first. But because he's wide receiver, corner, whatever, you know, all-time athlete in the draft, whatever you want to describe him at, I'm not going to count him as the first wide receiver taken. So the bold prediction is that the first wide receiver taken, you know, the first wide receiver after Travis Hunter taken, won't be the consensus favorite, Tet McMillan from Arizona. He's currently minus 290 as a favorite to be that first receiver, or if you count Travis Hunter as a wide receiver, the second receiver taken. I think it's going to be another receiver that goes before him. I don't see it with him. He's not Mike Evans. He's not a guy, to me, that's top half of the first round, and that's where you see him getting mocked. I could see Matthew Golden getting picked before him. I could see Luther Burden being selected before him, even though I don't think Washington will select Burden because of the things that we talked about last week. I love Luther Burden as a player. I could see either one of those two guys getting selected before Tet McMillan from Arizona. So that is my second bold prediction, that the consensus receiver to be taken first, or if you want to call it second, after Travis Hunter, McMillan from Arizona, won't be. Another receiver will go before him. And then lastly, this is bold, I think. Maybe not. The Bengals at 17 will take a pass rusher, maybe Mike Green, maybe Donovan Azaruco from Boston College. And then they will trade Trey Hendrickson. And they will trade him to New England, not Washington. A second and a third rounder. The price will come down from Cincinnati after they draft a pass rusher at 17. And they will deal Trey Hendrickson, who desperately wants out of Cincinnati, wants to get paid. And the price has been too high. They've been asking for a first plus. Once they get their pass rusher at 17, we will see a trade prior to Friday night where Cincinnati picks up a second and a third rounder from New England for Trey Hendrickson. And then the Patriots will have to pay him. Look, the Patriots have the cap space, and the Patriots have the picks. They have 2 third rounders. They've got a second and 2 thirds. Those are the three NFL draft predictions. One quarterback, that's bold. Tet McMillan's not the first receiver or the second receiver, if you want to count Travis Hunter as a receiver, to be taken. Either Golden or someone else will go before him. And the Bengals are going to take a pass rusher, and then they're going to trade Trey Hendrickson by Friday night before the draft. Do you have any reactions to any of those?
I'm not sure how bold the trade... I do think like, I think
the trade's not bold. I would agree with you.
Yeah, I think you're spot on, like, with that. I think that is something that is going to happen. New England, as you laid out, like, has all of the space in the world to make that kind of move, and it's definitely one that I know they're very interested in because they need help at that position. So I'm not crazy. It's not the third one is not very hot to me, but Tet, Matthew Golden's stock has risen so much that I'm not buying it in the NFL. I could be wrong because, I mean, we see fast guys from Texas all the time.
Yep.
But yeah, I think that there's a team that out there that is going to fall or has fallen in love with Tet and is going to take him pretty high.
You know, by the way, if Washington traded back and picked up a third rounder, let's just say, and they had, you know, their second rounder plus the second rounder they got in a trade back, they might be in better position to trade for Trey Hendrickson. Huh? All right. We'll take a 15-minute conversation to talk about the Caps, who just got an absolute stellar performance from Logan Thompson last night. Smoke and Al will join us next. End of the hour, I'll give you three Washington draft-related predictions as well. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, the team980.com. We're now streaming. We've got the Team 980 YouTube stream up, streaming my show, so you can watch it on YouTube if you want. If you go to watch it, please hit the subscribe button and hit the like button. That's good for us.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Visit DollarShaveClub.com and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more.
At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building a life.
For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at brag-worthy prices at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Since the dawn of Major League Baseball, every player has honed their unique skills.
Otani connects and it's gone.
Skeen strikes out the side.
Bobby Witt Jr. throws in time.
Harper does it again.
Witness the hills of the game in ballparks nationwide. Get your tickets today at MLB.com/tickets. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Big night last night for Logan Thompson. Stopped 25 of 26 shots on goal and was just incredible in the third period when Montreal had a repeat performance from their third period the other night, minus the actual goal scoring. Caps 3-1 winners over Montreal to take a 2-0 series lead. Of course, the series now shifts back to Montreal tomorrow night. Part of the call last night with Joe B. and Locker was Al Koken for Monumental Sports. He joins us right now. Of course, you can follow Al on Twitter at RealSmokinAl. So, is it just one of those explanations that is simple? It was goalie last night, why Washington won?
That's one way of putting it, Kevin. I mean, as you said, he was truly outstanding, but they did do enough to get the lead. I thought their response after Montreal jumped on them with the first goal was excellent. They got it within, I think it was literally 2 minutes and 29 seconds, if I'm not mistaken. So that to me was huge, that you just didn't let Montreal hang around with a lead, and then they added right to it. I agree with you, though, the repeat of the third period, I'm not trying to take any credit away from Montreal because they showed you the talent they've got, they showed you the energy they've got, they showed you the drive and determination they got. But I think much like in that third period of game one, the Caps kind of fueled some of that with some of the giveaways. I think if the Caps were just a little smarter with the puck, if they were a little more stay stubborn to just dump it in and go, you know, go bang bodies again, I think they'd be better served by that. I think they've allowed, you know, Montreal to start to believe in themselves with these third periods, and that would be my only concern. Other than that, they held serve, they got the 2-0 lead, and maybe this is going to be the message on the road. Keep it simple, and that may be a better way to get it done.
You know, I'm sorry, too, to start the conversation with hockey, because I know that you really want to talk about a guard that you really think they should take in the fourth or fifth round on Saturday. So we can get to that in a bit.
The one from Morehead State that I've been talking about on my Twitter.
You've been talking about him forever. I can't believe he's not projected higher, honestly.
Kevin, you watch. You're going to talk to me next year, and you're going to say, Al, you were on him.
You're right.
You were on him all the way.
Morehead State, backup guard. The dude had to come in and play when there were injuries. By the way, speaking of goaltenders, Montreal's goaltender, Sam Montembeau, has been pretty good, too, don't you think?
No question about it. I mean, he's been, again, the Caps have had their number these first two periods, and without Montembeau, you know, these third period, quote-unquote, comebacks really wouldn't, you know, would be just more imagined than actually real, because the Capitals would have a 2-3-4 goal lead. Yeah, and that was, you know, coming into the series, that was kind of one of the unknowns. You knew the Capitals had advantage in, you know, in many regards, in experience, certainly size and physicality, and we've seen that. I like the way they've used those two weapons to their advantage. You could wear a team down over a 7-game series. You know, I mean, I think the players and coaches look at it, not that we're using our size and strength advantage in just this game. They're looking at, if this thing goes 6-7, this is where eventually it's going to take its toll. So the Caps have done really great things there, but you're right. Montembeau has kept this Montreal team in the game to allow them to make these third period rallies or try and stage these rallies. And that was one of the unknowns coming in on the big stage. What would he be like? And much like Logan Thompson, he's a big goaltender who's also got a lot of athleticism to him. And you're going to have to maybe do a little better job of cashing in on some of these rebounds or taking his vision away. Because, if you let them get going on the at home, it could be a different story.
One of the things, and I heard you guys talking about it, whether it was you or Craig or Joe or Alan May or somebody back in studio, the thing that has made an impression on me, and this is kind of the first time watching, you know, Montreal, is just how much bigger the Caps are. And even though Logan Thompson was forced to make some incredible saves last night, it's like Montreal tilted the ice to a certain degree, and yet, with the exception of those two amazing saves, the size of Washington seems to be bothering them. Is that something that... Tell me about if that's a big deal right now in this series.
It's a huge deal, and it's something that coming into the series had to be an advantage that Caps must use. They are built that way. I mean, if you go back to the Stanley Cup team, you know, it was, they had plenty of size on that team as well, and that's something that has been the philosophy from George McPhee to Brian McClellan to now Chris Patrick. Yeah, you're going to get certain smaller players in different spots, but for example, like this, you know, one of the guys, they're missing two really key ingredients. Unfortunately, Martin Ferravari is going to be gone for the duration of the playoffs, and it's going to, you know, I think Alexiev has done a nice job stepping in, but we'll see if that takes its toll down the road. But, you know, Alexi Protas is a weapon that they don't have at 6'5", and when you watched him during the regular season, he's not the kind of guy, Kevin, that when he gets in on the forecheck is going to try and take you into the eighth row. But what he does do is he uses that body and leans on you. He uses that length of his and the stick length of his to pry pucks free and just to wear you down physically. That's another weapon that could be great for the Capitals if they get him back in this series, because that's how they are built. They're built to be a big, physical, imposing team when they need to be, and that's where you need it, in the playoffs. There's no question about it. That was one of the advantages this team had coming in, and I'm happy to see them use it in these first two games.
Yeah, and the Montreal top line features that guy, you know, Suzuki, but that guy Caulfield, who's tiny.
Oh.
And I just sometimes can't tell the difference, you know, and it's a random, you know, office skate or whatever. And I understand that, that Montreal's had two really good third periods in a row, and they could have won game one. And last night they were really pushing for the equalizer and almost had it a couple of times. But it just looks like it's a physical mismatch, especially if that top line for Montreal is really the only one that's truly threatening.
And that's what I said about that. When you get the turnovers and give them the fuel to start what they do best, which is speed through the neutral zone and then the creativity in their offensive zone. If you just keep them, I know it's impossible to keep them in their own end the entire night, but if you keep them in their own end the majority of the night, and you didn't even mention Lane Hutson, who is maybe 5'9", maybe, but look at the creativity when you give him space and room. Now, when he's got to go, and like on, it wasn't his fault, but on Ovi's overtime goal the other night, they got those guys trapped on the ice. Montreal made a mistake. They iced the puck. They claim they didn't, but it happened. So they have a line that was, you know, offensively minded with the young Russian Demidov, with Laine, who, by the way, got benched the entire third period last night, which is going to be a major story in Montreal when we get there later on today. And Hudson also was out there as well. So what did the Capitals do? They put Ovechkin out there with Beauvillier and Strome, and, you know, boom, it goes into the back of the net because they got a physical win of the faceoff. They had Ovi, the monster that he is, barging to the net, and look what happens. The Montreal Canadiens didn't have the weapons to take that away from the Capitals. So, yeah, when they use that to their advantage, when they keep a Lane Hutson trying to defend as opposed to attack, that's really the secret to this series. So they got to do a little more of that, quit the turnovers that lets Montreal get that jump. But I agree, you know, 100% that. But Caulfield is a dynamic scorer. But you see, only when you have room, if you can lean on him. And I thought the Caps did do a good job of defending last night. They spent more time in the third period defending than they needed to. But there was a lot of times where it looked like, ooh, there's an opening. Boom, it got closed off by a bigger Washington Capital player.
Yeah, I thought that one opportunity that Montreal had on the power play, and the Caps actually turned it around and had better opportunities during that power play, was big. You know, you mentioned Beauvillier. Like, this was was he expected to contribute like this after the trade? Because I know he was a trade deadline deal. He's been fabulous in the first two games.
Well, Kevin, one of the things that was commented on when the trade was made, and it was literally one of the greatest under-the-radar trades because there were some big names being wheeled about and the Capitals didn't get involved in any of it. They had some things. My understanding is they were willing to give up their first-round pick if they could be in on the Brock Nelson deal. But when the Lou Lamoriello asked for Ryan Leonard, they were like, you got to be kidding me, and they backed out of it. So they were involved, but Beauvillier, when he was acquired, one of the things that was said about him was, look at what he's done in playoffs past. He's been effective in the playoffs previously, and they looked at him as a versatile guy. You can play him in any of the four lines. And now, because of the injury to Protas, they got him up there on that line with Strome and Ovechkin, and he's been a perfect fit. He, again, is maybe not the biggest guy, but when you watch that speed get in on the forecheck and the creativity then, it's a really good guy to have there. He adds a real element of speed. There's, you know, Ovi's a powerful skater, and, you know, Dylan Strome is a magician with the pocket. He's fantastic. But that element of speed on that line to create a little something via the forecheck is really, really important, and he's provided that. It's been a great addition, but his playoff experience was something that the Capitals noted as why they picked him up.
Yeah, we're talking, of course, to Al Kokin. Caps up 2-0 in the series. It goes back to Montreal on Friday night. We'll talk about that in a moment. But, you know, bear with me on this because I'm watching really intensely for the first time this year. And I know Ryan Leonard came up just a few weeks ago. But what really strikes me about him, not knowing much about, you know, his college story at Boston College and what the expectations were, the dude is fearless at 19 or 20 years old.
Yep.
Like, he acts already like he belongs out there and probably thinks he should be on the ice even longer.
You're 100% right. There was always a swagger to his game. If you watch him at Boston College, he's always the guy that sticks his nose in there. He's always the guy that after the whistle seems to be involved. And he's carried that right over into the National Hockey League, which is impressive. Again, he's a solidly built kid, but he's not a big guy. I mean, he's, you know, in that 6 foot, you know, maybe a hair above that range. So he's not in the Tom Wilson, Lexi Protas, you know, class in terms of pure raw size. But you're right, the willingness to do what he needs to do physically has been very impressive. Without question, last night was, I thought, the best game that he's played since he's gotten to the Capitals. He looked up to NHL speed at everything he was doing. It was going to take a little while to get to speed because as good as you can be in college, it's a whole different animal. And I'm not saying he struggled coming out of the gate, but there were moments you could kind of see, oh, there was kind of like, there's a lesson. Oh, I guess I got to get rid of that a little faster. I guess I got to put a little more mustard on that pad. You know, so I think he kind of understood you have to pick up the pace. Last night, his pace was fantastic. He's an excellent skater. You know, his reputation is as a goal scorer. He led college hockey in goals scored. But you can see the playmaking ability. He's really smart with the puck. All up and down the lineup last night, in any situation they wanted him in, whether it was on the defensive end or attacking, he was really good. That was definitely his best game. And now, if the light has come on now for Ryan Leonard, that's a huge, huge bonus for this Capital team.
Yeah, really, he's actually fun to watch, too.
So,
for just the second time, I believe, in the last 17 games, Alex Ovechkin was held pointless. But, 6 more hits last night. He's leading the series, I think, right now, in hits. Yeah. So, I know that there was a point last year coming into this year where it's like, where's the impact going to come if it's not scoring? We're seeing much more than just scoring from Ovechkin, aren't we?
No question. And when you talk to the players about it, it's sort of like, if he's doing it, then we got to do it. You know, I mean, if the captain's leading the way, you can't then dodge away from it. You know, you got to get in there. And I think he's always been a lead by example type of captain, right? He's never been a guy that, you know, you're going to say, man, when Ovi had that speech, you know, it's always about follow my lead, boys. And when he feels the team needs something physical, he's the guy who always delivers it. So, yeah, there's always different ways. One of the other things I think is going to be fascinating to see how this all plays out is, as opposed to last year, the addition of a guy like Pierre-Luc Dubois, a center who you can put out there, and obviously he did a really good job in these first two games matching up with the Suzuki line. Yeah. They now have a center that you can say, okay, see that center over there? This is the guy we want you to take out. And he's been terrific all season long at that. They didn't have that last year. As you know, the last time they really had it was a healthy Nick Backstrom who could take that role. So it's something that Spencer Carberry didn't have at his disposal last year. He's got it this year. And playing with Wilson and playing with McMichael, look at what McMichael did last night, you know, with the 2 goals. So there's, you know, the Strom line had the big night in game 1. McMichael with that Dubois and Wilson line had the big night. You're seeing, as we talked about, Leonard playing with Ellen Mangiapane, and then we've seen the consistency of what Nick Dowd's done. So having 4 lines who you can really count on has been huge. That was the factor in 2018, the third and fourth lines, with Lars Eller, ironically, on the third line, and Jay Beagle centering guys like Devontae Smith, Pelle, and others on that fourth line. You know, they were the difference makers. And so this now having that balance that you didn't really see last year, I'm going to be fascinated to see how this plays out. Now, Martin St. Louis can try and use the matchups at home to get Suzuki away from Dubois. So that means somebody else is going to have to take that matchup most often. But it does look like there's a little better balance now in this lineup that you won't really get exposed if you say, ooh, they put the Suzuki line against Eller. Well, fine, you know. Lars Eller is capable of that. But it is interesting to see how this is going to match up now in Montreal.
Yeah, I don't know anything about anything, but like you mentioned Mangiapane, I think that's number 88. Like, I think he's been incredibly active. And then 22, Duhaime, I think it is.
Yeah.
Yep. He's on that last line, right? He's played well.
And that's the balance I'm talking about. So they've got everybody kind of now is situated into their roles. It is going to be interesting. When Protas is available, where do you put him?
Where would he be?
Right now, Well, I mean, it's where he normally would have been is where Bevilier is. So you would have had Protas up there with Ovechkin and Strome. And that's a fantastic line as well. So where now do you want to disrupt the chemistry there? But then where do you disrupt the chemistry? As we just talked about, all four lines are really delivering. And it was interesting, Montreal really only played three lines for the most part. The, you know, Armia and Heinemann, you know, didn't get a lot of time, where Spencer Carberry was pretty consistent with getting his four lines out there, which again can be a factor as this series goes on. But if Frotis is available and he's been skating, I don't know, you know, what he's going to do today, but if they can get him back in this series, it's something you want, but it's going to be interesting to see how they balance that out. Now, who basically doesn't get in, because as we just talked about, there haven't been any passengers on any of these forward lines.
All right, they go to Montreal for game three on Friday night, game four on Sunday. I've heard this, and I'm going to ask you, this place, especially since they have not seen a playoff game in a while, when they were in the finals during COVID, they were only allowed 3,500 fans into the arena. So how good is that place, and how loud and how raucous is it? Will it be insane Friday night, tomorrow night?
It's phenomenal, Kevin. It's one of the largest buildings, if not the largest building. So you've got the advantage of having a few thousand extra fans in there, and they make themselves known. But it is a place, and I've seen it when it starts out just like insane bedlam, loud craziness, and then one goal gets in, two goals gets in, a third goal gets in, and suddenly you're in a museum. I mean, they can be taken out of it, but when they're in it, they are truly a factor. It is going to be insane. It's as hockey crazy as you can find, and as you mentioned, the lack of being in for a playoff for so many of these fans is going to make it even more special. But, you know, the Caps, you know, I've seen the Caps play some really disciplined button-down road games this year where they just come in, they keep it simple, they just grind you out, they get there, they take care of their opportunities, and if they can play that type of game, the crowd can be taken out of it. But if you let the crowd fuel up that team and let them get off to the type of start that they haven't really had, but they've had in the games they've had in the third period, if they carry their third period games into the first period, that's going to be a really difficult task, because then the crowd is just going to fuel them even more.
Is Montreal's fan base the number one most passionate fan base in the NHL?
It's tough to say, because I mean, you look at what's going on, like when they have the cutaways of outside
Toronto.
Of the arena in Toronto, and you see, you know, I mean, that's insane too, right? So in terms of a fan base, I just don't know if it's even crazier than Toronto, for example, but it's got to be up there. And they crank it up in that building, the noise, the ole, ole, oles, it's unique. And also too, you know, the mixture of English and French makes it unique as well. I mean, it's something that's fascinating. When you hear the Canadian national anthem in both languages, and you know, the public address announcer announcing things in both languages. I mean, it creates a different and more and unique environment. But I would say, you know, Montreal, Toronto, in terms of just the overall amount of fans and the passion and the living and dying every day, even in the off season, there's no question. I mean, it is the number one. I don't care what the Blue Jays do. I don't care what the Alouettes do. There's no question. It's the Maple Leafs and the Canadians, 365, 24/7.
All right. Merci beaucoup, Smokin' Al.
Yes,
nicely nicely done. We'll talk Morehead State guards and special teamers maybe on Saturday.
Long snapper.
On Saturday show.
You got to get a long snapper. Get a long snapper, man. Trade up. Never fails. Never
thank
fails.
Thank you for doing. Hey, thanks for getting up. Really appreciate it.
Kevin, you cut it in my sleep time, man, but only for you,
I know.
My friend. Only
you and Buck. You and Buck, basically,
right.
Anything before noon is like, you know, you're
no,
cranky
no.
The rest of the day.
No.
All right.
That's right. No.
Thank you. Talk to you soon.
You got it, pal. All right, Kev.
Al Kokin, everybody. I've got some Washington draft predictions next. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.
Sorry about that, everybody. I was getting off the phone with Al Koken. All right, last night, the Washington Capitals had an impressive win. Logan Thompson led them to a 3-1 victory. He made some impressive saves down the stretch. He saved 25 of 26, including all 14 shots in the third period. He posted a 9.62 save percentage. Caps take a 2-0 lead. They will continue their series on Friday night. Pregame at 6:45 on 106.7 The Fan. The Nats got off to a hot start last night, putting up three runs in the first inning. James Wood hit a 430-foot bomb to right center, quickly followed by a Josh Bell two-run jack. They win 4-3. They're going for the sweep tonight on 106.7 The Fan. And tonight is the night. The NFL draft is upon us. Coverage begins on the Team 980 at 4 p.m. with Craig Hoffman's show. And then at 8 p.m., Toby Altizer and Linnell Willingham will take you all the way to 1 a.m. This update is sponsored by the Team 980 YouTube page. Just open the app, type in the Team 980, and hit subscribe. Kevin Sheehan is live from 10 to 1 and Craig Hoffman from 4 to 7. Don't forget to like the stream and turn on notifications to stay up to date on all things DC sports. And that's what's trending.
With the second pick in the 2024 NFL Draft, the Washington Commanders select Jaden Daniels, quarterback, LSU.
A year ago, tomorrow night actually, because it was the 25th, of April last year in Detroit, but that was the selection 1 year ago, and it'll be a selection, I think, after one season that we will remember for a long time, especially when you consider in terms of recent drafts, they got this one right in a major way. I mean, what a rookie season Jaden Daniels had. You know, the build-up to the draft last year was Caleb, Jaden, Drake May. It was pretty much, you know, a given really after the Super Bowl and as we started to build towards the draft that Chicago was going to take Caleb Williams, number one overall. And so, you know, the evolution of the debate and the conversation went from, is it Jaden Daniels? Is it Drake May? A lot of people started to like J.J. McCarthy. There was a belief that a lot of people might like J.J. McCarthy enough that he could go as high as number two. And then as more and more people got into the process, and I talked a lot about this last year, that a lot of the NFL people don't watch a lot of college football until the NFL season is over, and then once they start to really delve into it, you start to get opinions that sort of change or are formalized. And what became pretty clear to everybody as we got into March is that Jaden Daniels was either the best quarterback in the draft, but certainly no worse than the second quarterback in the draft. Now, there were a lot of Drake May people out there for sure. And look, in our own fan base, there were a lot of, you know, trade back, pick offensive linemen, pick defensive linemen, keep Sam. But this was never, ever a question, thankfully, within the organization. The minute, you know, Adam Peters said he turned on the tape for the first time, he said Jaden Daniels was his guy. And this was not just an after the pick sentiment. Trust me, because in talking to people during and then afterwards, the organization as a whole was all bought in, from the scouts to the front office to the analytics people. Everybody said this is a no-brainer. And Adam Peters went a step further, saying that if they had had the first pick overall, they would have selected Jaden Daniels. I don't think he needed to say that, but to emphasize how much they loved the player, he talked about that. This was organizational. There were, from my sources, going back to last year, there was literally no pushback from anywhere in the organization. Everybody, ownership, coach, GM, everybody in the front office, scouts, the analytics and the research group, everybody said, this is the guy. And this is the guy by a lot. And you know, it's only one season, and there were six quarterbacks taken in the top 12 picks last year, and Bo Nix had a pretty good season, and Michael Penix Jr. in his brief, you know, play at the end of the year looked a little bit like the part. Drake May certainly looked the part by the time we got to the end of the year. Caleb Williams had a tough first year. There's a lot of reasons for it, including the dysfunctional situation that he was put in from a coaching staff and from an organizational standpoint. They had some talent on the team. We'll see what happens with Ben Johnson as his head coach. And, of course, J.J. McCarthy never had the chance because he got injured in training camp. But it would be hard to believe that 10 years from now we don't look back and think that at the very least Jaden was either the best or in the top two quarterbacks that were taken. I still would never give up on Caleb Williams at this point. There's just too much talent. And I do think Penix Jr. has a massive upside. But they got a guy, knock on wood, he stays healthy because that seems to be the biggest and only thing that could stop him. They got the guy that they've been trying to get for decades. And it makes this year and the years that follow much easier this time of year. But also more interesting because there's so many potential players to pick from. 1 year ago, tomorrow night, April 25th, Jaden Daniels, number 2 overall in the 2024 draft to Washington. All right, when we come back, I've got Washington-related predictions. I'll give you my thoughts on the corners in this draft. And then we will get to our predictions on who Washington selects in the first round. Craig and Chris are going to jump on with me at the end of this hour. We'll get their predictions as well, talk draft with them. Ben put out his final mock draft. He'll join us at 12. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, the team980.com. Don't forget, we are now sponsored by our Team 980 YouTube page. You can see us streaming this show on the Team 980 YouTube page. Open the app, type in, open the Odyssey app, type in Team 980, hit the subscribe button for us, and also like the show for us as well.